Well, if nothing else, I think we can all agree on one thing. Nobody has more heat in WWE right now than Bray Wyatt. Burnt to a crisp to close out what actually I thought was one of the better pay-per-views WWE has done all year. This is your WWE TLC 2020 review here for Sunday, December 20th, 2020. That's a lot of 20s. I am the Solemn Monster. This is the final pay-per-view of the year. I do have to say the amount of interference in the two TLC matches. We had one for the WWE title. We had one for the Universal title. Both of which I thought were excellent matches, but the amount of interference in both of those matches was ridiculous. Just constant, nonstop interference. But those are your two title matches on the show, and they both delivered big time. And the Inferno match, I have to say, you know, I was worried about what it would look like if it was a straight wrestling match and not a cinematic style match, which it was not. It was not a cinematic style match, although it was pre-taped. We'll get into that later. But for what they did, I thought it was an interesting spectacle. It was not as bad as it could have been. Doing a match like that, basically a regular match, you know, I say regular, but, you know, a match in the arena, just using weapons and stuff. I actually thought they did a pretty good job. It was completely ridiculous, of course. The pay-per-view ended with Randy Orton burning up the Fiend alive right in the middle of the ring, or a Fiend dummy. I think they lingered on that for a little too long. But we got some great visuals. Now, where they go with the Fiend at this point, now that he has literally been burned alive, I have no idea. But he's the Fiend. He's got puppets. He does all of this ridiculous over-the-top stuff. So, for all we know, the Fiend could show up on TV tomorrow night. Remember, many years ago, Triple H was dropped from a car 50 feet. And a week later, he was back on TV with only what they told us were contusions. This is the WWE world. This is the WWE universe over here. They can do anything they want. But where the Fiend goes from here, I don't know. But Randy Orton should be chased down right now by law enforcement. I'm sure he won't be, because anything goes in WWE. You could literally kill somebody on pay-per-view, and that's okay. Although I would argue the match was over at that point. Randy Orton had already won the match. He should be charged and arrested. Guess we'll have to find out on Raw tomorrow night. But let's start from the very beginning. Goes all the way back to the kickoff show. The kickoff match was an 8-man tag team match. It was Big E, Daniel Bryan, Otis, and Chad Gable taking on Sami Zayn, King Corbin, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Cesaro. A lot of great talents in the ring for this match. And Baron Corbin was there too. Otis hit a caterpillar on Nakamura. Gable demanded the tag from Otis. Now, he tagged in Chad Gable, and Gable came in, lost the advantage. But there was a great Chaos Theory spot where Gable had a power, he had a muscle up Cesaro. Almost couldn't get him over, but he got him over for the Chaos Theory. Sami Zayn, who was hiding out at ringside, he gets back up on the apron. And he takes a tag back into the ring from Cesaro once he is able to make it over to the corner. Well, Big E tags in, and Sami Zayn wants no part of Big E. They go at it for about a minute. It ends with a big ending. Big E gets the win for his team. I thought it was a fun little match, and I made the comment on Twitter before the pay-per-view started. I said, you know, I wonder, he did pin the champion. And the Royal Rumble is a long ways away. Are we going to get an Intercontinental title match on SmackDown this Friday night? It is Christmas Day. They're going to be taping that show on Tuesday. It's not going to air live. Would they do the title match on the Christmas episode of SmackDown? And in fact, we got our answer a little bit later on in the show. Big E is going to challenge for the championship on Friday night. I don't know for sure if they're going to pull the trigger and do the title change, but I could see it. I mean, I'm leaning towards that as being the outcome. Be a nice little feel-good moment for Big E to win the belt on Christmas Day. So that match is already set for Friday night. Now we get into the pay-per-view, the main card. Open with one of our two TLC matches on this show. This one for the WWE Championship, Drew McIntyre defending against AJ Styles. first few minutes was just McIntyre muscling him around and flinging AJ around the ring like he was nothing. Styles wedged a chair in between the top and the middle ropes in the corner. Ended up taking a slingshot himself, though, head first. We had, you know, a lot of the usual ladder spots you would see in this match. A lot of slow climbing. Drew is climbing at one point. AJ chucks a chair at his back and knocks him off. McIntyre did hit the Future Shock DDT. AJ, though, he was focusing on the knee. If you remember the end of Raw Monday night, you might not because you probably didn't watch Raw, because a lot of people didn't watch Raw because Raw did its lowest rating of all time on Monday night. So I will tell you that at the end of Raw on Monday night, AJ chop blocked Drew McIntyre in the knee at the end of the show and put him through a table. So AJ was focusing on the knee here in this match. There was an assisted, a ladder assisted calf crusher, followed by a chair assisted calf crusher. I don't think I've ever seen that before. So he was working over the knee for a while. A few minutes later, Styles hit the phenomenal forearm. And Omos, don't forget AJ's bodyguard, the 17-foot-tall Omos. Outside the ring, he slides another ladder into the ring. And AJ begins to climb. But Drew is back up. And he press slams AJ off the ladder. And he walks over to the ropes. And he throws AJ. AJ goes ass over head, over the top rope, down through a table outside on the floor. So AJ is wiped out. Drew starts climbing when all of a sudden who should run down but The Miz. Of course, The Miz has the Money in the Bank briefcase. John Morrison had it. Miz just ran down to the ring. Morrison was bringing it up the rear. And Miz powerbombs McIntyre off the ladder through a table. And he tells the referee, I want to cash in. I am ready to cash in my Money in the Bank. And so now this has turned into a triple threat match, and this is one of the ideas that I had floated on my predictions video from Thursday. Because we've never seen someone cash in the middle of a TLC match before to make that a triple threat. The only time we've seen anything like that is WrestleMania with Seth Rollins, and that was just a regular match that turned into a triple threat. So that's what happened here. Miz starts climbing, almost though. He gets into the ring, and he stops The Miz. And he grabs The Miz, and he is holding this man. He is cradling him like a little baby. He is cradling him like a child, trying to put him to sleep. He very casually walks over to the ropes, and as gently as you can possibly put somebody through a table, he reaches over, and he drops The Miz through a table outside the ring. That'd be the nicest table bump that anybody has ever taken. Morrison from behind, he takes a steel chair, obviously a gimmicked chair, and he shatters it across the back of Omos. The chair explodes, and the guy doesn't even flinch. Doesn't even react. I thought that was pretty badass. You want to get this guy over as a killer, I mean, you don't really have to do much because he's gigantic. I thought that was a cool spot. So he ended up chasing Morrison to the back, and we didn't see either of them again. Drew and AJ, they're both climbing the ladder slowly. Miz makes his way back into the ring. He sets up a ladder of his own right next to theirs. AJ gets knocked off. Now Miz and McIntyre are on top. They're ramming each other's heads into the ladder, and The Miz gets knocked off. All of a sudden, AJ springboards off the top rope back into the ring and onto the ladder. And Miz ends up pushing the ladder over. Actually, no, McIntyre got knocked off. I'm sorry. McIntyre got knocked off, and we had Miz and Styles were going at it on top of the ladder. AJ ends up crashing and burning. Miz also got knocked off. Soon as he gets back up, Miz gets right back up. McIntyre just claymores the shit out of him. Kicks him right in the face. That was the end of The Miz. And McIntyre ascends the ladder. He pulls down the championship, and Drew McIntyre remains WWE champion. And the Money in the Bank briefcase is officially wasted for 2020. That briefcase was wasted. Let's be honest. That briefcase was wasted the minute they put it on Otis with no plan on what to do with it. Oh, it'll be funny. We'll just put the money in the bank on Otis. We'll figure it out as we go along. Well, they never did figure it out. And so it went from one guy to the next. It went from one comedy act on the show to another comedy act on the show. And so rest in peace, Money in the Bank briefcase. What a waste. Great match, though. Great match, I thought. It was the correct outcome. And The Miz, look, as far as The Miz goes, The Miz is a loser. The Miz should not be anywhere near the WWE title right now. Right now, he shouldn't be within spitting distance of the championship. I'm glad this Money in the Bank fiasco is over. I'm glad they didn't take the title right back away from Drew McIntyre. Frankly, I don't understand why they took the title off him in the first place, other than just to do a title change and then just have him, you know, challenge for it on TV, try to pop a rating. I mean, what was the point of even taking the title off of him? Just to give Orton number 14? So I'm glad that it was an unsuccessful cash-in. Although I have to say, I don't remember the bell ringing after The Miz said that he wanted to cash in. Now, maybe I missed it, but I don't remember the bell ringing, and I'm hoping that that is not some backdoor way of him coming on TV tomorrow night and saying, well, I never officially cashed in, therefore I still have the Money in the Bank contract. I hope that is not what they're planning on doing, but I don't remember ever hearing a bell. I am surprised we didn't see Sheamus, though. AJ and Omos, they left him for dead on Monday night. I thought for sure that he would make an appearance here and help his buddy out and try to get revenge on those guys for what they did to him. So that was surprising. The fact that we didn't see him was a surprise. Damn it, Dan. Are you kidding me? Burn, baby, burn. Damn it, Dan, with a $100 super chat. Or Vince McMahon. That's the face that Vince made when he I'm sure he was waiting with bated breath for my clip to go up on YouTube a little bit earlier on when I was talking about Monday Night Raw. I would imagine that's the look on his face. But holy shit, damn it, Dan. You're setting the bar awfully high here for early in the stream. So, surprised not to see Sheamus, but I thought overall an excellent match between Drew and AJ. Sasha Banks defends her SmackDown Women's Championship against Carmella. Early on, Sasha sent Carmella through the ropes. This was very early in the, like in the first maybe minute and a half of the match. And Sasha sends Carmella out of the ring through the ropes. And it looked like Carmella was about to have a very bad day. She was thrown out of the ring very awkwardly. It looked like she was going to go splat on the ground. Whatever they're paying her assistant, his name Reginald, is that what they call him? He's the sommelier, the champagne guy, old Reggie. They should give him a bonus. Whatever they gave to Sim Snuka at WrestleMania 25 when he did not catch the Undertaker and the Undertaker almost died, they should do the opposite and give this guy a bonus, because he caught Carmella and probably saved this woman's life. Did old Reggie over here. Sasha hit an Eddie Guerrero frog splash because the announcers talked about Eddie being her inspiration. Eddie was her idol. So she hit an Eddie Guerrero-esque frog splash off the top rope for a near fall. Carmella with the code of silence, and Sasha counters out of it, tries for the bank statement, but Carmella gets out of it instantly. Sasha tries again, locks it on when here comes Reggie. Saving his woman again, he pulls Carmella out of the ring, brings her to safety. Sasha off the apron hits Reggie with a Meteora. Carmella catches Sasha with two kicks to the head. She rolls Sasha back inside and tries to steal a win. Sasha, though, kicks out. Carmella goes for, I don't know what it was. She might have been going for a front face buster, a face plant. She might have been going for something like that, but Sasha immediately takes her down for her third attempt at the bank statement, and this time she gets the tap out win. So Sasha Banks retains her championship. I thought this was a good match. Sasha should be beating everybody. She should be a world beater right on through WrestleMania. I'll keep saying it. The match to do is Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair. And right now, things are situated exactly where they need to be to make that happen. Sasha is still the champion. Bianca's feuding with Bayley. I'm sure when they have a rematch, ultimately she'll prevail. She's my pick to win the Women's Royal Rumble. She should win the Women's Royal Rumble. That's the match to do at WrestleMania. That being said, you know, Carmella, I thought she looked good tonight. She was impressive. But the right woman won. The right woman won the match. So now we get to yet another championship match here on this show. We have The New Day defending their Raw Tag Team titles against Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander of The Hurt Business. These two teams have already had a couple of matches on TV for the tag team titles. And The New Day won both of those matches. Cedric Alexander, he has singles wins over both members of The New Day. And there is Professor John Gotti topping Damn It Dan with a $105 super chat here on TLC Sunday. Randy tried to burn it down, says the good professor. Class is in session, everybody. Professor John Gotti is joining us tonight. He is in the Sound Off record books. He went crazy last month on our anniversary stream. I love it. I love it. My thanks to the good professor who has topped Damn It Dan. He now has the record for the night, but it's still early. It is still early. Raw Tag Team title match. Very good match. Hardly surprising given the teams that were involved here. Cedric Alexander and the Hurt Business, they had Xavier Woods cut off and isolated from Kofi Kingston for a while. Woods fought back. Kingston got the hot tag. Hurt Business tried the Doomsday Device at one point, and Shelton, I think it was Shelton, had Kofi on his shoulders, almost dropped him, but he caught him. He caught himself. He got his balance, and they went for a Doomsday Device, but Kingston rolled through. Kofi hit the SOS for a near fall. Cedric hit a brainbuster for a very close near fall. Shelton and Kofi fought up to the top rope. Benjamin got knocked down, but he runs the ropes. Back up he goes, hits a superplex off the top. So now Shelton is setting up for the finish. He's got this thing well in hand. And from behind, Cedric tags himself in. He runs over to Kofi Kingston, and he hits the lumbar check. And Cedric Alexander basically steals the pin away from Shelton Benjamin, and the Hurt Business are the new Raw Tag Team Champions. Reign number, 10, I think, for the New Day. Reign number 10 has come to an end, as it should have. This is a title change that had to happen. This is a title change that is well-deserved. The Hurt Business has been one of the few things that I have actually liked on Raw all year long. Has been the stuff with MVP and all of his guys. And so that gives the tag team titles now and the United States Championship to MVP's crew. I would expect the Hardy Bros, right? Matt and Jeff. Yeah, dude. They'll be next in line, I think, for a shot at the Raw tag team titles. If for no other reason, because they don't have any other freaking tag teams. How many other tag teams do they have on Monday Night Raw? We've got the New Day, we've got the Hurt Business, and now we've got the Hardy Bros. Who else is there? Who am I missing? There's a very short list. So, you know, Matt and Jeff getting a tag team title match is not really as impressive as it sounds. But again, the right, much like the SmackDown Women's title match, the right people won here in this bout. And that brings us to the WWE. Women's tag team titles, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler defending against Asuka and a mystery partner. I would have expected them to, you know, you look at this storyline, and I would have expected the payoff after all of the bullying and all of the abuse, physical and verbal and psychological, that Lana has had to endure on television and we by having to watch this storyline for months now, that the payoff would be having a tables match where Lana gets to put Nia Jax through a table. And that is how Lana and Asuka win the women's tag team titles. Not that I was dying to see Asuka and Lana as tag team champions. Don't get me wrong. But if you're just looking at this from a logical storyline perspective, now we don't know why Lana is out for a few weeks. She's going to be gone about 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know if she's hurt. Maybe she's legitimately injured. Maybe she's got some kind of other commitment and she can't be on TV. So we don't know exactly why she's gone. But this is what they've been building to now for months. Would that not have made more sense after putting Lana through a table 9 straight times on TV? That the payoff is Lana puts Nia through a table and in doing so wins for her team the tag team titles. Now you might ask, well, how the hell is she going to powerbomb Nia Jax through a table? There's lots of ways to do it, right? Nia could have been up on the ropes in the corner. Table's already set up. Here comes Lana, just pushes her over. It was not to be. They shot an injury angle on TV on Monday night. And we were told that it is an elbow injury for Lana, an elbow injury and an MCL injury in her left knee. That is a diagnosis. So much for that payoff. To no one's surprise, I predicted this on Thursday, but believe me, I'm sure I'm not the only one who predicted this. I would expect that most people probably predicted who the mystery partner was going to be. So yeah, Charlotte Flair was the partner. Charlotte Flair was the mystery partner for Asuka. The last time we saw Charlotte Flair was back on television on June 22nd. We saw Charlotte Flair on Raw back on June 22nd. And who was she brawling with? Who is the person who injured Charlotte Flair in storyline? I have to specify storyline because when we talk about Nia Jax, she has racked up quite a few victims legitimately. This was a storyline injury, at least I think. So she injured Charlotte Flair on TV. She took her out. It only makes sense. Charlotte was due back any day now. Why wouldn't she be the mystery partner and look to get her revenge on Nia Jax? And that's exactly what happened. Out she comes. She is the mystery partner. 6 months off, though, and it's a shame that Charlotte didn't improve that damn moonsault. That's a shame. Hit the moonsault off the top rope out to the floor. Over-rotated again, landed on her feet. I don't know if it's just that she doesn't trust that the people are going to catch her, if it's just the fact that she's got these long-ass legs, because she is very tall. But, yeah, I know she's a gymnast and all that, I get that. But again, who exactly is that supposed to hurt? When you do a moonsault like that and you over-rotate and you land on your feet, yeah, it's like the bozos who do the dives, what Jim Ross was just going off on. I mean, if you're going to do one that actually looks like it's killing the other person, then fine. But unfortunately, it's the same old moonsault. But she wiped out Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler with it. And I'm just not sure what's supposed to be so devastating about it. Kirifuda clutch on Asuka. Flair makes the blind tag. Figure four on Baszler into the figure eight. But Nia Jax broke up the hold. Asuka hits a dive outside the ring, takes out Nia Jax. And Charlotte, in the ring, hits natural selection on Shayna Baszler, and she gets the pin to win the women's tag team titles. Up to that point, it was a pretty basic match, nothing really special about it. I gave you the most exciting part of it just now. But it is yet another title for Charlotte Flair to add to her count. It boosts the number of championships up that she has now held in WWE. Now, part of the reason why I said on the predictions on Thursday, I made the comment and I said, if the mystery partner turns out to be Charlotte, then we have new champions. If it's anybody else, if it's Peyton Royce, if it's Lacey Evans, I mean, Naomi comes back, if it was anybody else, then Nia and Shayna retain and go on to defend next probably against Mandy and Dana Brooke. But part of the reason why I was so sure of a title change isn't just, oh, it's Charlotte Flair, was the fact that I realized that Charlotte has never been a women's tag team champion before. So you know they wanted her to hold that title at least once. No better time than the present time. Well, now she can claim that she's also been a women's tag team champion. So now we have Asuka two belts, and this could be the start of the build to another match, possibly at WrestleMania, between Asuka and Charlotte Flair. I mean, I'm not really sure who else there is for Asuka to work with at WrestleMania. Unless Vince McMahon is banking on a Becky Lynch return, which is probably a possibility. I'll be honest, I'm surprised that he didn't have her back in the ring a week after that baby dropped out. As soon as the baby came out, I'm surprised he didn't have her back in training at the PC the next day. But you really, I mean, the well runs dry short of calling up somebody from NXT, and I don't want to put that evil on them. There aren't a lot of really great options for who to put in the ring with Asuka if she's still the champion heading into, I mean, God, even the Royal Rumble. Rumble, WrestleMania. But you've got a women's champion now who's one half of the tag team champions. You know how these things end. These things do not end well. Not only is there a history between these two women, but you know at some point they're not going to get along, or they're going to lose the belts, and one is going to blame the other. So it looks like we may be headed to another match between Asuka and Charlotte Flair. And the one good thing about that, they have great matches together. Asuka and Charlotte, I can't remember them having a bad match. So if that is the direction, it's kind of played out, but at least we know what to expect when we get the two of them in the ring. That you can't really complain too harshly about. So surprisingly, they did not say, although now that we have the benefit of hindsight, we see what they did at the end of the show. It's pretty obvious why they ended with the match that they did. It would be a little weird for them to do a match like that in the arena, in the building, somebody is murdered, and then we go back to Michael Cole or Tom Phillips, who just says, well, moving on. Can't really do that. So we got our other TLC match here, this one for the Universal Championship. Roman Reigns was, I guess, not the head of the table tonight. He was second to last, defending his championship against Kevin Owens. Reigns entered first. He was attacked by Owens in the ring before Owens could even make an entrance. Roman's music was still playing, and out from, I guess, the crowd or wherever he came from, here comes Kevin Owens. He attacks Roman Reigns, taking it to him right away. He's going off on this guy. He throws Reigns into the ring steps outside. He hits a splash off the apron. Jey Uso immediately gets involved. Owens catches him with a kick to the head. So Owens is just a house of fire, man. He is taking everybody out. After what happened to him on SmackDown Friday night, he has had enough. He's fed up with this nonsense. And so he's batting these guys away all on his own. He hits Reigns with a chair, hits Uso with a chair. Uso went for a super kick. Owens hit him in the ankle. Then he pelmanized the ankle. And I'm old enough to remember a time when you did an angle like that, where you quote-unquote pelmanized someone's ankle in a chair, and they were gone for months. They had a cast when we saw them on TV. It was a serious injury angle. Even Shawn Michaels, didn't he get pelmanized by the throat by Kane many years ago? And blood's like shooting out of his mouth. And here, this guy, basically, he got pelmanized, and he was right back in the match, hobbling around on one leg a few minutes later like it was nothing. Oh, well. What are you going to do? Referees came out to help Uso to the back. I have to say, the crowd noise they were playing in these last few matches, especially this one, I mean, look, it's better than having nothing at all, but my God, the friggin' soundtrack during this match was so friggin' loud. It was like, just dial it back a little bit. It was like unnaturally loud. They went overboard with it here in this match. Absurdly loud. Owens cleared off the announce desk. Roman caught him with a drive-by. He was about, I don't know, half a dozen shots with the ring steps in when he decided to throw him back in the ring, and he's beating on Owens with ladders, and he's beating on Owens with chairs. Owens fought back, had his fingertips on the title when who comes back out? But Jey Uso. On one leg. He comes back out, pulls him down. Roman Reigns hits the Superman punch. So now it's 2-on-1. Owens takes down Uso. He drops Reigns with a stunner. Roman rolls out to the floor. Owens hits a pop-up powerbomb to Jey Uso through the announce desk. And he buries Uso under the rubble of the table. So now Owens is back inside. And he is climbing the big dramatic climb, you know, can he do it? He's climbing the ladder. Roman Reigns, though, comes back in and stops him. And Reigns powerbombs Owens onto a ladder. which Michael Cole referred to as a spine buster through a table. So again, Roman Reigns power bombs Kevin Owens onto a ladder. Michael Cole says, no, no, it is a spine buster through a table. Was he watching the same match that the rest of us were watching? Reigns chokeslams Owens through a table outside the ring. Owens won't quit. Samoan drop through another table. No matter what he does to this man, Owens will not quit. He will not die. He will not go away. Get that water bug I was chasing the other day. No matter what I did to this thing would not die. You know how hard it is to kill one of those things? Especially if it's in a room with carpet. Those things are like fucking tanks with legs. You can't just stomp on it. You've got to like take a friggin' flamethrower. That was Kevin Owens. Wouldn't give up. Roman Reigns is telling him, you're embarrassing your family. Just stop. You're embarrassing your family, he says. Owens slaps him in the face. Reigns spears him through a table that was set up in the corner. So now they're outside the ring. And Owens is just egging him on. Come on, come on, come on. And I could see where this is going. Because you could tell it's the spot where the guy spears the other person through the barricade by the timekeeper's area. Owens dodges it, and Reigns just explodes through the wall. This is a great visual, right? He just spears the barricade. He goes crashing through it. And now Kevin Owens is back in the ring, and he's climbing. And he's climbing, and they're building the drama here. Can he do it? Is Kevin Owens going to do it? Is he going to win the championship? Roman Reigns gets back and says, he totally no-sold it. Reigns is already back in the ring, and he pulls Owens down. He rams him into the ladder. Two super kicks by Kevin Owens, Superman punch by Reigns, pop-up powerbomb through a table. And with that, Roman rolls out to the floor. And this, I thought, was the best of all of the dramatic attempts in this match to try to convince you that Kevin Owens might win. And there were a few of them. This is the one where I almost bought into it, after the pop-up powerbomb through a table. So they did a really good job with this. And both guys did an incredible job, I thought, you know, playing their part here in this match as well. But he's climbing, and Jey Uso is back again. He pulls Owens down. Owens gives him a stunner. Back up the ladder we go again, and Roman Reigns with his Thanos glove punches Kevin Owens in the balls. And that was the beginning of the end for Kevin Owens. Roman applies the choke. Owens goes out. He falls down to the mat. Roman Reigns reaches up. He retrieves the championship, and Roman Reigns remains the Universal Champion. Two excellent TLC matches on the show, and what I learned from this match, I don't usually learn a lot from these WWE pay-per-views, but I did learn something here in this match. And what I learned is that Kevin Owens is a man with no friends, because every single time Kevin Owens would try to win this match, Jey Uso was there. He would knock him out of the picture for a few minutes. He'd come right back. It was basically a handicap match the entire time. And at no point during this match did any of the babyfaces from SmackDown, any of the babyfaces from Raw, nobody bothered to come out to try to even the odds and help this man. But if you think about it, it kind of makes sense. Why would they? What is Kevin Owens known for? What is Kevin Owens' MO in WWE from the very first day he showed up in NXT? He turned on his best friend. We've seen him turn on Sami Zayn. We've seen him turn on Chris Jericho. I'm sure there's one or two other people I'm not thinking of right now. This guy can't be trusted. If you become his friend, he'll just stab you in the back. So actually, from a storyline perspective, it kind of makes sense. I wouldn't want to help this fucking guy. Why would anybody want to help him? All he does is turn on people, so fuck him. And that's what everybody in the back apparently said. Fuck him. So poor Kevin Owens is a man with no friends. But the streak continues of great Roman Reigns matches ever since he came back. I really was a big fan of those matches he had with Jey Uso. And the match with Drew McIntyre at Survivor Series I thought was excellent. This was an excellent match as well. And Kevin Owens was perfect in that role of just the never say die babyface. They had some great dramatic moments where, you know, you thought there for a second that he might just pull it out. But in reality, I mean, let's be honest. The finish here was never really in doubt. Roman Reigns was the only choice. It's too soon. Can't take the title of Roman Reigns. That would be stupid. They announced the date for the Royal Rumble, which I think there was some question as to whether, you know, it would be the last Sunday of the month or the Sunday before. We now know the Royal Rumble will be January 31st. And so we got that announcement. Then came the announcement of the Intercontinental title match coming up on SmackDown this week with Big E and Sami Zayn. Yeah, people in the chat wondering who's next. I think, you know, Daniel Bryan is probably, you could save Daniel Bryan for WrestleMania, because we know it's not going to be The Rock. I wouldn't mind seeing Reigns and McIntyre, but I'm not sure they want to take the title off McIntyre and they want to keep him on Raw. You know, and I think things are aligning perfectly to do Drew and Sheamus. If they continue to build that story well, that could be the WrestleMania match on the Raw side. So who do you put with Roman Reigns? Daniel Bryan would be a logical choice. I thought maybe they would go with Big E. It looks like they're not ready to do that just yet. You know, he's going to be in that Intercontinental picture for a little bit. So Daniel Bryan is as good an option as any, but you got to get to WrestleMania first. So what do you do with him at the Royal Rumble? That's where Bill Goldberg comes into play. That's why I went on that rant last week and I said, keep Bill Goldberg the fuck out of the WrestleMania main event. If you want to do Roman Reigns and Bill Goldberg, I got no problem with it. You can do Roman Reigns and Bill Goldberg, but do it at the Royal Rumble. And build up a match for WrestleMania between Roman Reigns and somebody on SmackDown, somebody on the main roster. They have a built-in story that goes back 5 years. Which, to me, is a hell of a lot better than I have a spear and you have a spear. Or you went to Georgia and I went to Georgia Tech. Who gives a fuck? You can do Goldberg and Roman at the Rumble. You could do Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. And there you go. That would seem like the logical path to me. And everybody's saying Goldberg doesn't have to come back. Look, I don't disagree. But the fact is, Goldberg is coming back because Goldberg has a contract. Goldberg is contracted to 2 matches per year. And they don't even know when they're going to be back in Saudi Arabia. I'm sure that'll be one of them. So I'm sure we're going to get Goldberg. It does not have to be against Roman Reigns in the main event of WrestleMania. That's all I'm saying. And then it was time. It was time for the first ever Firefly Inferno match between Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton. Specifically, Randy Orton and The Fiend. Got to specify which version of Bray Wyatt we're talking about. WrestleVote says that the Inferno match was pre-taped this afternoon and was not originally scheduled to close out the show. I don't know. I mean, if they knew what they were doing, how do you not close out with this match? That's kind of ridiculous to think about. Look who's back, everybody. It's Damn It Dan with another $100 drop here. The Fiend equals Michael Myers from Halloween, roasting on an open fire. He says, happy holidays, Solemn Monster. Well, happy holidays to you as well, Dan. Thank you for the super chat. I appreciate that. Yeah, Bray's chestnuts were roasting on an open fire at the end of this pay-per-view, along with every other part of his anatomy roasting on that fire. So to answer that question, this match did not air live. It was taped earlier today, and it was not a cinematic-style match. When they first announced it, they didn't give any details about what kind of match this was going to be. Firefly Inferno, what does that mean? I figured, okay, it sounds like it'll probably be, some kind of a cinematic-style match. We've seen Bray have these types of things before with Braun Strowman and John Cena and even Randy Orton. Bray and Randy Orton had half of it, well, anyway, was cinematic with the House of Horrors match 3 years ago. I had no interest in seeing a straight-up one-on-one wrestling match between Randy Orton and The Fiend. This was a hybrid. This was a wrestling match. This was not cinematic. This was in the arena. But they did introduce these other elements into the match. They would never have been able to do what they did here tonight if this was in front of a live audience. So what they did was, in the Thunderdome, no fans. They took advantage of their environment. They took advantage of the setting. And they had some editing tricks up their sleeves. And the stipulation was that the only way to win was to light any part of your opponent's body on fire. So they borrowed that from the original concept of the WWE Inferno matches. But the Ring of Fire was not surrounding the ring. Because they had no fans in the audience, instead, the flames would shoot up from behind the barricade. And I didn't think it hurt the match at all. And you got to think that if you're actually working in the ring, it's got to be a lot easier to work a match like that than it would be to work a match with flames around the ring. It does make for a better match. I mean, think about it. If you're in the ring and you've got fire on all four sides of you, there's so many things you can't do. You can't hit the ropes. You can't do anything from the top rope. Every little movement you make, it's like you're walking on eggshells because you don't want to trip and fall or fall into the flames, and it makes for a boring match. So they had a much better match because the flames were not right there where they were in the ring. You know, it's a special occasion when Randy Orton walks to the ring and he's wearing pants, which he was on this night. No Alexa Bliss with The Fiend. She is on a little bit of a sabbatical with her fiance. Randy Orton punches The Fiend. He kicks The Fiend. All The Fiend does here at the beginning of the match is laugh. That's all he does. Orton, no matter what he does, The Fiend just laughs in his face. And then The Fiend finally begins his assault. Hits Sister Abigail. Flames shoot up from behind the barricades. Fiend pulls a strap out from under the ring, starts whipping Randy Orton with the strap. Then he lights the strap on fire. He dips it into the flame. Now he's got this strap that's on fire, tries to whip Orton with it. Orton avoids. Back under the ring, The Fiend pulls out a pickaxe, tries to hit Orton with it, but he misses. Fiend grabs a gas can and a rocking chair, and he puts the rocking chair down. He douses it in gasoline. He pours a little gasoline trail on the floor, and he places Randy Orton in the chair. He sets the trail of gasoline on fire, and you get this great visual of the pathway to the chair is slowly igniting, and Randy Orton, just in the nick of time, dives out of the chair, and then the rocking chair is just engulfed in flames. Again, you could tell where they edited this, but you could not get away with this in front of a live audience. You just wouldn't be able to do it. So it worked to their advantage, the fact that they had no people in the building. Orton wraps a chain around his hand. He punches The Fiend with it, tries to push his face, tries to push his mask into the flames. Back in the ring to wrestle for about 20 seconds. They actually return to a wrestling match there for a little bit. So then they end up right back outside the ring on the floor. Bray grabs an axe handle and he dips it into the flames. Now the axe handle is set ablaze, tries to use it, but Orton kicks him in the gut. It's a draping DDT on the floor. Orton now, he's outside the ring, he's crouched down, and he is setting up for the RKO. So he's going to finish this guy off, he's going to give him an RKO on the floor. Bray, though, locks on the mandible claw. And he's got the claw on Orton, but Orton is sort of pushing this guy back, and he's pushing The Fiend back towards the barricade where the flames are shooting up. So he pushes him further back, and finally The Fiend is in the fire, and The Fiend's jacket is set ablaze. And it looked like it was, you know, Bray Wyatt wearing that jacket. I'm sure they rigged him up perfectly safely, but yeah, sometimes you could tell it's like a stand-in or something. Bray has a very particular body type. So you can kind of tell when it's him and when it's not. Paul Hamilton, what's going on, man? $111, the 111. Tis the season. Wow. That's an odd number. 111? I love it. I love it. Again, more fire emojis. Where's all the fire emojis in the chat? I saw them early. Let's go. I'm talking about the fucking Inferno match here. Where's all the fire? Let's go. We're getting to the big climax here. I got a picture to show. You want to see what The Fiend looked like on fire? I'm going to show you here in a second. So like I said, his back is up against the barricade. And now The Fiend's jacket is on fire. And you have this great visual of The Fiend is standing there. And he is engulfed in flames. And there it is. Right there. The Fiend is standing there. His jacket is just full of flame. Look at all the fire. Yes, the fire. It's a great visual. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, some of the other Inferno matches that we've seen, and there haven't been that many in WWE history, but all of the Inferno matches that we've seen, even the first one with Undertaker and Kane, the ending of that match was fucking lame because you could see, like, Kane put a plastic bag, like probably a fire retardant bag or whatever, on his hand, and he just so happens to dip his hand with the bag on it in the flame, and he goes running off. And it, not that I want to see Kane burn, but, you know, it kind of takes you out of it a little bit. Other Inferno matches, you gotta figure out a way to get around the stipulation because you can't set somebody on fire in a safe way in the middle of the ring. So you look at that, and that's how an Inferno match should be. If you're going to do a fucking Inferno match, then guess what? This is what you should be seeing. So I actually thought this was a really cool visual. Look at that. Dokken, yes. Brian Becerra says, Dokken, into the fire. Dokken, into the fire. That's a good one. I like that. So the Fiend is burning, and he slides into the ring. So while he is on fire, this guy dives into the ring, and as he gets into the ring, Randy Orton hits him with an RKO. That has got to be, if not the coolest RKO he's ever done, the second coolest, probably behind the Seth Rollins one at WrestleMania. But, I mean, how can you say this one isn't, I guess this one would be the hottest, not the coolest. The guy was literally on fire. He ran into the ring, and Randy Orton gave this guy an RKO while he was on fucking fire. It was a fantastic visual. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm thinking now, the match is over, right? The stipulation was that you have to set some part of your opponent's body on fire. So the match is over. Nobody is ringing a bell. Nobody is saying anything. And Randy Orton is getting some evil thoughts in his head. So Randy Orton goes outside the ring. He's not done yet. So Orton brings a small little gas can into the ring, and he is slowly pouring it on the Fiend's body. He's pouring it on his face. He's pouring it on his chest and his legs and his arms. He's dousing this guy. He is dousing this man in gasoline. And he grabs a box of matches from outside, and he lights a match, and the announcers are begging him. Samoa Joe on commentary is just beside himself. Randy, don't do it. Don't do it, Randy. And he drops the match, and he sets the Fiend ablaze, or a Fiend dummy. This was the one part which looked a little ridiculous, because you could tell it was a dummy. They lingered on it for too long. You could have just shown like a quick clip and then cut away and been like, oh, we're not going to show this. But they kind of lingered on it, and you could kind of tell, like, all right, maybe they got a little too cute for their own good here, but I mean, in terms of sinister things that we've seen people do on WWE television, in terms of sinister shit that Randy Orton has done over the years on WWE TV, it's hard to find something that tops this. They literally had this guy burn somebody to death. And it's not a coincidence that this happens the same week that WWE draws its lowest television ratings ever for Monday Night Raw. You will have people say, well, come on, this was the plan anyway. I find that to be an awful coincidence. But guess what? It's not going to work. You're not going to turn things around that easily. But this was quite the visual. So the Fiend was not buried. Fiend was not buried, but he was burned. And Randy Orton is the winner of the Firefly Inferno match. And that's how they went off the air. So now the question is, what the fuck happens to the Fiend? The question should also be, what happens to Randy Orton? Because this man just murdered this man on pay-per-view. How does Adam Pearce not show up on TV tomorrow night and say, Randy, can I talk to you for a second? I gotta find you. You know, it's just like it's a formality. That little thing you did last night where you set that fucking guy on fire, you really shouldn't have done that. So, you know, I'm gonna fine you $50,000 and we'll call it a day. I don't know where this is going. I have no idea. And all the people saying that that's the end of the Fiend, rest in peace, Fiend. It's the Fiend. Like I said, this guy could be back on TV tomorrow night. Not as the Fiend. It could be Bray Wyatt. We may have a new Firefly Funhouse tomorrow night. Because it's Bray Wyatt. It's not the Fiend. They can do anything they want to. Yeah, it's goofy. Yeah, it's hokey. But no, this is not the end of the Fiend. this was better than I think it had any right to be. This match was better than I thought it would be. And if you're going to do an Inferno match in the traditional sense, you know what? They did it the right way. If somebody has to be set on fire, you can't say that they didn't deliver on that stipulation. They didn't light the guy's hand on fire. They didn't light the guy's pinky toe on fire. So I look back at this pay-per-view, and I think that this was one of the best shows that they've put on all year long. You know, these guys went out there tonight. Drew McIntyre and AJ Styles, Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. And they killed it. They killed themselves, but they killed it. I don't really think there was a bad match on the entire show. Let's see if you guys agree. We'll take a look here at the Twitter poll results. Then we'll get to your comments and all of your super chats. Really? See, I find that a little surprising. I thought that number would be a little bit higher. Thumbs up. 69%. 69. And thumbs down, 31%. So that is the ratio so far. You know, I thought it would be just maybe a little bit higher. I wouldn't call it, 90-10 or anything like that, but it's a little surprising. But you guys can vote right now. Let your voices be heard. At Solomonster on Twitter. I want to hear from you. So let us go ahead and take a look here at your super chats. Got a whole bunch of them here, man. We got a lot to get through. We'll start from the newer ones. We'll work our way back. Andy M with the $5. If John Cena had one match at Wrestle Kingdom, who would you book him against? John Cena. Yeah, Wrestle Kingdom is coming up in a couple of weeks. For those of you who are New Japan fans, or even if you just check out Wrestle Kingdom every year, that's going to be a fun 2 days, back-to-back nights again at the Tokyo Dome. If John Cena had a match in New Japan, I would almost think him and Tanahashi is probably the match to do, right? Tanahashi is kind of like the John Cena of New Japan in many ways. So I would think that's probably a pretty big match you could do. Neil Childs, please do another Excalibur impression. You like the Excalibur impression? I was just talking about the way that he enunciates certain moves. Like the pile driver. It's just weird. He does commentary in a way that I've never heard anybody do commentary before. Otherwise, I think he's pretty good. But in some of those situations, it's very strange. Manuel Macias, are you tired of all these DQ finishes in WWE? Seems like every big match always ends in a draw or ends some other stupid way. Also, when do you think AJ Styles will win another world title? AJ, I'm sure before it's all said and done for him, you know, he'll have at least one more. Maybe as a babyface. I don't know when that's going to be. Yeah, they do way too many DQs. Way too many DQs, way too many roll-ups, way too many dives, but that's not just a WWE problem. So they have to dial some of that stuff back. Professor John Gotti with a very tame $5 super chat. Thank you to him for all of his support tonight. Says the real MVP tonight is The Fiend's hair for not catching fire. Hugh Jazz, one of my favorite super chatters. When should The Fiend return, and will he have a new mask? Well, he'll have to, I guess, right? It'll have to be some kind of new mask that he'll have to have. Let's keep going through these here. Ali Nadim, they should keep The Fiend off of TV for a while after this. Knowing WWE, he'll be back in a week, and the announcers will say he has multiple contusions. Well, that does sound like something they would do. Julian Shaw, thank you, man, for the $10. I appreciate that. Giovanni Zarate, dropping $50. Wow. No message. Just wanted to show some support for the channel. That's very cool. I appreciate that. Crash with the $2. What about the Inferno match with Kane and MVP? Yeah, I vaguely remember it, but what was it? I think MVP's arm was set on fire. Is that what it was? I don't remember thinking it was all that great. Kayfabe for the win. Not the worst thing to happen to The Fiend in 2020. No, I think what happened to him in Saudi Arabia was much worse. Brian Mahoney with the $5. Why is it such a bad idea to put the title on Owens? Everything is always to get more heat on the heel. Reigns is already as over as he is going to get. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And if the plan is to put the title on Brian or someone like that, then it's just better if Brian is the one who finally can do what nobody else has been able to do. So I just think it works better. You know, I just think it works better if you just wait a few more months before you take the title off of Roman. Paul Hamilton, man, again, wow. I got to thank you for that. Damn it, Dan. Says The Fiend, again, I've mentioned this before, equals Michael Myers from Halloween 2. Yes. I guess he was roasting, wasn't he, at the end of that movie? And then he came back also. So if Michael Myers can come back, then so can The Fiend. Cameron Johnson, how about John Cena and Roman? If Cena is available. No, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. We've already seen it. I don't need to see that at WrestleMania. The True Heel Master, John Cena is the Tom Brady of pro wrestling, and Kenny Omega is the LeBron James of pro wrestling today. You are going to get more heat from some of these folks in the chat than Bray Wyatt had at the end of this pay-per-view tonight. What do you guys think about that? He just said Kenny Omega is the LeBron James right now of pro wrestling. Do you agree or do you disagree? Let's get some debate going on in the chat. Oh my goodness. One and only, do you think we'll ever see Kevin Owens in AEW? I know him and Jericho are good friends. And it could be the fresh start that he's looking for. I mean, look, never say never. The last I heard about Owens and his contract status, he had signed a 5-year contract. And I want to say that was a couple of years ago. So if he's going to go anywhere, it's not going to be for at least a few more years. Connor, this was a great pay-per-view. Owens versus Reigns. Evan Watson, why do they keep wasting Money in the Bank cash-ins? Reigns KO at the Rumble. They could. Yeah, you know what? You could do that. You could get, I'll tell you what, you could get another match out of Owens and Reigns with a stipulation that tries to keep Jey Uso out of the match. Kevin Owens had the match won. Were it not for Jey Uso, he can go on TV this week and talk about the fact that were it not for Jey Uso, he would have had this match won tonight. So do you do a cage match or some kind of stipulation match? Jey Uso in a shark cage above the ring? You could come back. I mean, they got 2 pay-per-view matches out of Jey Uso. You can get 2 pay-per-view matches out of Kevin Owens if you wanted to. E. Bizzle, have you forgiven the Hulkster yet? For what? What stupid thing has he said now? Professor John Gotti, there he is again. I heard Solid Monster say my name. Justice for Shayna. Zero Pile. A lot of people telling me that TLC was the best pay-per-view of the year. Those pay-per-views this year have been very hit or miss. I would say those people, I think, are correct. And if you didn't tune into the show tonight and you're looking for a recommendation, I would recommend you go ahead and check it out. Paul Hamilton from earlier, great pay-per-view. Almost as compelling as The Adventure of Hardy the Horse. That's very nice of you to say that. Alex Jimenez, what wrestling books would you most recommend? I've been using Audible. Audible's got a lot of great ones. Of course, we have a link. You can get your book for free, which I don't know why you wouldn't. audibletrial.com/solomonster. They got a ton of great ones up there. I know they have the Bob Holly book, The Hardcore Truth, which I highly recommend. There's a book review on the YouTube channel from about, I don't know, 6 years ago that I did. Great book. Justin Roberts, Best Seat in the House. That's up there as well. Jim Ross, at least one of his books. I think his more recent book is up there. I don't know if Bret Hart's, I don't think Bret Hart's book is, Daniel Bryan's book. I've heard great things about Daniel Bryan's book. That's on Audible, I know that. So take your pick. I would recommend any of those. I've heard good things also about Hornswoggle, Dylan Postal. His book is on there too. Rizzo, why do you think they didn't give Money in the Bank to AJ? If I remember correctly, didn't AJ have the briefcase but dropped it and Otis caught it? That is how Otis won. From the moment Otis won Money in the Bank, it was treated like a joke. And that's why it failed. They didn't have a plan for it, and they treated it like a joke. It went from one joke to the next. You could have given it to AJ Styles. I think AJ was my pick. I think when I did my predictions on who would win Money in the Bank or who I was hoping would win Money in the Bank, I think AJ Styles was my pick. So I agree. He would have been a fine choice. There's Damn It Dan again. Chris Quillman, which Icon episode are you looking forward to the most? Are those the A&E documentaries that they're working on with WWE? Because if not, I don't know what you're talking about. And even and if that is what you're talking about, I don't remember the entire list of documentaries they're doing. I know one, they're doing one, I think, on Stone Cold. I don't remember the other ones. Rodimus Prime, good pay-per-view overall, but that last match was fire. LGBTQ pro wrestling community with the five. Charlotte looked incredible, and we're happy she is back. We also think that this might set up Asuka Charlotte Part 2 at WrestleMania 37. A lot of people still upset about what happened to WrestleMania 36. She had an excellent match with Rhea Ripley, but you look at the year Rhea Ripley has had, she really never recovered from that level where she was. She really hasn't risen back up to that level since that loss to Charlotte. Erasmo Solis, a great show overall. Are you convinced Roman is officially a heel? He was made to look like Edge in 2006. He does feel like a bigger superstar than before. Maybe even the biggest right now. There could be no debate about what he is. I mean, what more does he have to do outside of doing what Randy Orton did tonight and setting people on fire? The guy's a fucking heel. TC. I love that the entirety of that shitty 3-month Lana Nia storyline was just a vehicle to put another belt on Charlotte. First time online, this company hates Bray Wyatt. Then why did they give him the main event? What is I'm looking at the chat. What's Chris saying? You must have been setting up the stream while the preview played after the pay-per-view. Oh yeah, I didn't see it. I was getting ready to go live. So fill me in. Fill me in on what I missed. Because as soon as the pay-per-view goes off the air, I got to start getting everything together. Takes me a little while to get going here. Tyrus Moody, do you ever think there are too many tag team matches on the show? Yes. And that's in WWE, and that's in AEW as well. But, you know, AEW has all of these factions. It's like everybody is in a trio or a faction of some kind. But yes, there are way too many tag team matches. The True Heel Master, will you buy replicas of the AEW World Title and the IWGP? No. I cannot justify spending any more money on belts unless one lands in my lap. There's my boy Jams. I think that's Deadpool. James Herrera, what's going on? WWE, huge ass, thank you. WWE Icons is their version of Dark Side of the Ring. Oh, okay, I did not know that. Turtlehead, again, thank you. Brandon Mobley, thanks for the stream as always. Great content. The True Heel Master. WWE creative handling Monday Night Raw is like watching the New York Jets season all time low. They won today, I believe, right? I didn't see the game, but I believe the Jets actually won a game today. Hell has frozen over. Paul E. in the chat says RSPW Rewind is always going to be his favorite segment. Look, I don't care what your favorite segment is. As long as you're enjoying the content, that's all that matters to me. So if you love RSPW Rewind, you're going to get more of them. I know you're not getting them as often as you might like, but There's only so many posts. I have to preserve content here. But RSPW history, the inboxes, the more inboxes I'm going to be doing. As long as you guys enjoy the content, man, that's all that matters. And if you have ideas for other content that you'd like to see, by all means, thesolemonster@gmail.com, @solemonster on Twitter. I'm always open to ideas and suggestions. You guys help, run this place here. You run the joint. So you tell me what you want to see and what you want to hear. Wednesday night, I usually go live for AEW. AEW this week is being preempted by NBA basketball. Not even preempted. It's being pushed back a little bit. I am not staying up and reviewing AEW at midnight. So if I go live on Wednesday, I'm probably doing an NXT review this week. I haven't done a live NXT review since October. I do them from time to time if AEW is preempted. So most likely, that is where I will be putting my reviewing attention on Wednesday. So even if you're an AEW fan, hopefully you can come on in and hang out with me. It'll be fun. That'll be the last stream before Christmas, coming up on Wednesday night. Frost says, do NXT. All right, we'll do NXT. We'll plan to do, what is it? I don't even know what the game is. What is the game on Wednesday? Is it the Lakers? Is that what it is? Chris in the chat is very excited. He didn't even know Triple H had his own signature series title. Yeah, some wrestlers do. Undertaker, they gave him a custom title that looks pretty cool. They probably have them all on WWE Shop. If you go take a look at the list of special belts, they had a China one, right? Didn't they do a special intercontinental title for China? Any way to make money off her, right? For years, she was persona non grata. Then she died. Now they try to make as much money off her as they possibly can. That's how it works. Lakers and Celtics. All right, apparently that's the game. Lakers and Celtics is the game coming up on Wednesday night. Well, I will tell you that I will not be watching the Lakers and the Celtics. That I can tell you. So yeah, I got an early wake up on Thursday. I can't be going live at midnight if that's when AEW is going to go on. Paul Heyman with the super chat. Can you review the NBA on Wednesday? You know how ridiculous it would be for me to review the NBA, given my limited knowledge of the NBA. I mean, I could just start reviewing random non-wrestling shows on the channel. I could review the NBA. I can review what is it? The Real Housewives of something? Love and Hip Hop? Oh yeah, that would go over really well. That would be a train wreck, is what that would be. So I don't think that's gonna work. Powerful one, sorry about that, Solomonster. I don't know what happened there. My real question is a buy or sell on which is the better feud between the two top guys of their companies, Okada and Tanahashi, or Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin? I mean, come on. Now, you know, I'm a Rock and Stone Cold guy. I wasn't a young child, but I consider that, you know, part of my my wrestling youth. Part of what I grew up on. I grew up on Hogan, Savage, and all of them, but Austin, Rock, you can't top that. But you know what? To a Japanese wrestling fan, they probably would have a different opinion on that. But for me, it's got to be Austin Rock. I can't vote against that. Cannot vote against Austin and Rock. It's hard to top that. Will WWE icons cover China's post-WWE life? I don't know. I don't even know what subjects are going to be part of the first season. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go look up information on it and find out. This is the first I'm hearing about it. I didn't see it when they announced it after the pay-per-view because I was getting ready to go live on YouTube. One thing I have not seen, and it went on the network today, is the new Broken Skull Sessions with Drew McIntyre. So if any of you guys saw it, let me know what you thought. I'm not as excited to see that as I am some of the other ones, but I'm sure it's still very good. Hashway says, I did not hear you read my super chat from before. Oh, I'm sorry I missed it. I will go back and see if I can find it. A quick question. I love the light in the background. What is it called? Because I want to buy something like it. That is an RGB LED light. And I don't know offhand the exact one. I don't have it in front of me. But you can find a whole bunch of lights like that on Amazon. They're not that expensive. I think this one cost me $80, which compared to some of the other equipment and stuff, $80 is nothing. So I just thought it was cool. And I thought it would be something just to kind of light things up in the background a little bit. And I love it. It's great. I bought a tripod, so it screws. It's got the mount, screws right into the tripod, reflects off the wall. And yeah, just type in RGB LED lights. It's like a small rectangular shape. This one has a whole bunch of different modes. You could do straight colors. You could do red, green, blue. But it's got all kinds of settings. I don't want to give you guys a seizure because I could also do strobe lighting. It's got a setting for police and ambulance, like sirens, thunder and lightning, candlelight. We keep it simple, though, with the rotating light. CJ, one of our mods in the chat. What's going on, CJ? I hope you're having a good night. Why don't you ever do a show with your brother? He doesn't want to come on. That's the honest answer. I've like jokingly suggested before, why don't you come on in here? He just gave me the stink eye and he walked off. So yes, the answer is he doesn't want to come on. He's very shy. The true heel master, the Undertaker, is the Joe Montana and Brett Favre of pro wrestling. Manuel Garcia, in your opinion, who do you think is a bigger draw or better wrestler? John Cena in the prime of his career or Roman Reigns? I mean, bigger draw is John Cena, by far. By far, it's not even close. But you give Roman Reigns another 5 or 10 years, who knows, he may overtake Cena. Cena was one of the few things that was really holding WWE up. If WWE didn't have John Cena, if he wasn't as over as he was, selling all that merch and, you know, moving tickets the way he was, I'm not saying he was like Stone Cold or Hulk Hogan at their peak. WWE would have been far worse off without John Cena if they didn't have him. Better wrestler, though, I probably would have to go with Roman Reigns. Big Kane, 23. Long ago, WWE used to have their champions wrestle the IWGP champion back in the 70s and 80s. Why did it stop? Because that was pre-Vince McMahon Jr. And Vince Jr. does not play well with others. He has a few times, you know, I mean, WWF did a joint show with, what was that promotion? SWS in Japan. They did some kind of super show back in like 1990. WWE would sometimes send wrestlers to Jim Cornette's promotion as like a favor, Jerry Lawler's promotion. But as he got bigger, Vince McMahon really didn't have any interest anymore in working with other people. So that's why it came to an end, basically, because Vince was looking to grow his own brand that he didn't really give a shit about anybody else's. But yeah, he used to have matches at Madison Square Garden back in the 70s with Antonio Inoki and champions from other promotions. That used to be commonplace. He used to have the NWA champion against the WWF champion. You'd have Dusty Rhodes in there and Harley Race in the ring with people like Bob Backlund. And yeah, I mean, that used to be commonplace, you know, back in the day. Heavyweight Drake says, I emailed you 5 years ago and you still haven't answered. Well, in my defense, I have so many emails that it's going to take me about 5 years to get through all of them. It says, could you please retro review it and tell me what you think? Well, I'll tell you what. I have no idea what email address you sent it from. So either tweet me or send me another email. And I promise you I will look for it this time. And in the email, let me know what the subject line was. And I could probably go back and search it out. Roman is a wank pheasant. Ashway, thank you for the buck, man. Turtlehead. Didn't at first, but I think I like the idea of Brian and Roman, being it was because of Brian that the fans turned on Roman. Shout out to my clients. That's what I mean. You know, the story between Reigns and Daniel Bryan is a story that goes back 5 years. Going on six. You could even take it back to 2014. But really, it's from that 2015 Royal Rumble. Bryan went out early in that match, very unceremoniously dumped out of the ring. And people were pissed. That whole pay-per-view, by the way, was an abomination. The 2015 Royal Rumble is in the dumpster fire of WWE all-time pay-per-views. And that was one of the reasons why. And it wasn't Roman's fault. But you're right. People were rebelling against the company, and Roman Reigns just so happened to be in the line of fire. It wasn't really that he did anything wrong. So if they wanted to tell that story, and Paul Heyman is heavily involved in Roman's material right now. He helps write a lot of the promos. He's very hands-on with Roman's stuff. So with him involved, I'm sure he could help craft, because he was around for all of that. I'm sure he could help craft a very good story going into WrestleMania. Drew says, sorry to say, but the writing sucked with Roman. Back then? Oh, yeah. You mean you didn't enjoy suffering succotash? You didn't like that quality writing? Look who dropped another super chat. Paul Heyman. Do you think WWE is booking John Morrison as a joke, as punishment for leaving years ago and becoming a bigger star in Lucha Underground and Impact? And again, when you say bigger star, what do you mean by that? To you and me, as like hardcore diehard wrestling fans, yes, he was he felt like a much bigger star as the champion in Lucha Underground and the champion in these different places. I miss Johnny Mundo in Lucha Underground, but he was a much bigger star in WWE in terms of his notoriety and being on television every single week. But they did not use him to his full potential. Do I think he is being punished for that? Put it like this. We have heard from people who have left WWE. We heard it recently in an interview that I think it was Gerald Briscoe who actually said this. And think about how many years Jerry Briscoe has you know, been in WWE. And I'm trying to think if it was Briscoe, if it was somebody else. I want to say it was Briscoe, but it was somebody who was recently let go by WWE who made a comment. And actually, no, I take that back. I'm sorry. It was not Gerald Briscoe. I'm thinking of a different interview. It was Mike Chioda. Mike Chioda was with WWE as a referee well over 30 years. He did an interview recently, and he made the comment that if they bring you back, they have brought back guys over the years, that even though they hire them, rehire them, bring them back, they will sometimes do it just as a way to control them and punish them. That's how petty they can be. So, yeah, I can believe that maybe that is part of the reason why they were interested in bringing John Morrison back to the company. Because it's not as if they used him in any kind of serious way yet. Maybe eventually they will. I mean, he's been getting a lot of TV time. But he is certainly nobody who is booked to be any kind of serious act on the show. Oh, SnackFan01. What are the pros and cons about social media in wrestling today? Wow. You talk about a loaded question. The pros and cons. Pros and cons of social media when it comes to pro wrestling today. I mean, where do I even begin? Do I even need to say? Guys are showing their ass on social media all the time, saying stupid shit, doing stupid things. Imagine if those guys all coked up in the 80s were on Twitter. I mean, it would be entertaining as all hell. But there are a lot of careers that would have been ruined many years ago if you had social media back then. Guys say stupid shit. That's the biggest thing. You know, everybody feels like they have to share everything on social media. Every photo, every thought, every tweet. And so inevitably, you end up sharing something that ends up making you look like a fucking idiot. Or saying something that gets you in trouble with your company, whether you work for WWE or somebody else. So it's a very negative thing in wrestling. If you are a wrestler, a lot of wrestlers have caused great damage because of it. Social media, in a lot of ways, has also been a tremendous thing for pro wrestling. You know, for all the trolling and all the negative comments and all that kind of stuff, you know, it does bring people together in the wrestling community. It allows people who are content creators online to build a brand or promote their shit, their shirts, their shows. It allows WWE and all these promotions to have a direct outlet to the fans in a way that they never had before. Social media is what you make of it. Unfortunately, a lot of people use it for a lot of really stupid shit. Powerful one. I find it odd that Miss Elizabeth has not been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Do you have any idea why that is? I don't know why Elizabeth is not in the Hall of Fame any more than any of the other people who should have been in the Hall of Fame who aren't. King Kong Bundy, Vader, people who are dead now, who surely have a place in there. And maybe they'll get in there one day, but they won't be there to enjoy it. They won't be there to give a speech. You know, then you have other people who are still with us. Demolition, Rick Martel. You know, maybe some people just don't want to go in. I could see somebody like Martel maybe just completely being divorced from the wrestling business and just not having any interest in going in. He seems pretty content with his life outside of wrestling, but there's so many other people. There's no rhyme or reason for it. Remember, the Hall of Fame is up to one person. And he either wants you to go in or he doesn't. Yeah, when Pat Patterson passed away a few weeks ago, it might have been in the Observer bio. Meltzer was talking a lot about the Patterson Ray Stevens team from many years ago. And there was the thought of putting Ray Stevens in the Hall of Fame when WrestleMania came to California a few years ago. And Patterson was the one who really pushed for it. And I think his name might have been on the list. And then at the last minute, Vince McMahon decided that he didn't want him going into the Hall of Fame. And even though Patterson was probably very upset, his name got yanked. Why these decisions are made by Vince McMahon, who knows? Only he knows. But it is very strange. Elizabeth was a huge part of the Macho Man character when he came into WWE. People, associate the two of them. You mention one, you can't mention the other. You can't not mention the other. She belongs in the Hall of Fame as much as anybody from back then. Cyndi Lauper, talk about celebrity wing. But I kind of stopped caring about the Hall of Fame stuff a long time ago because you get upset over it for no reason. At the end of the day, what does it really mean? As long as we remember who they are, right? We remember the performers. We talk about them. I talk about them on my show. Everybody else talks about them. Keep their name out there. Yes, John says, can you imagine Twitter, if Twitter was around when Savage's Waffle House incident happened? There are a lot. You talk about the McDonald's incident, the boulder. The boulder through the window of the McDonald's with Ken Patera. I mean, my God, you can go down the whole list of incidents over the years. I think it would be fucking hilarious if Twitter were around. It might not be so good for the wrestlers. All right, let's take a look at where things stand with the Twitter poll. I have enjoyed chatting with you. 68% thumbs up, roughly 32% thumbs down. So you can vote right now at Solomonster. That is the place to go. And you guys can let me know what you thought of the pay-per-view tonight. I think just to kind of bring it back to TLC, which is kind of the reason that we're all here, right? Bring it back to TLC here for a bit. I think that there's the Fiend. There's the Fiend from the main event. I thought that this was one of the better WWE pay-per-views of the year. I thought the key matches, you know, the show is called TLC. The two TLC matches on the show tonight delivered. Drew McIntyre and AJ Styles, Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. Hardly a surprise. They busted it tonight, right? They put the work in. They put together some pretty cool things, some pretty cool spots. I enjoyed both TLC matches. And those really were the two main events, even though this match here was the main event tonight. And even this match. didn't exactly know what to expect from a Firefly Inferno match. And what we ended up with was probably the closest thing to a real Inferno match WWE has ever given us. I mean, people are going to look back on the Attitude Era and Undertaker and Kane and say, oh, that was the best one, because it was the first one. And because people, you know, romanticize that period. But again, just think of the stipulation and look at what they did tonight. If you're going to do an Inferno match, then that's the way to do it. Ridiculous as it may be, that's the way to do it. So I was more than happy to give this pay-per-view tonight a thumbs up. I think it's well-deserved. HBK C83 says, what wrestler currently would you build your promotion around? What current active wrestler would I build my promotion around? Ah, boy, you know, I don't know, man. There's a lot of good ones out there. Impact, or AEW, obviously, is kind of building things now around Kenny Omega. He's appearing in different promotions and stuff. WWE, for... it's not the wrestler's fault when it comes to the creative shit in that company. They have a lot of talent. And I think you could reasonably build around a lot of people in that company. Honestly, I think somebody like Roman Reigns doing what he is doing now, he's just firing on all cylinders with that character. He looks the part. He carries himself like a champion, like a main eventer. I wouldn't have any issue building my brand around him. He'd probably be, honestly, he probably would be at the top of my list. I can probably pick a few people from each promotion. Like, I think Nick Aldis does a fine job with the NWA World Heavyweight title. Maybe build around somebody like him. You know, looks the part, well-spoken. But Roman would probably be the guy. Brian, which picture are you talking about? Oh, you're talking about The Fiend? He says, that picture has to be a super chat. Which picture are you talking about? I assume he's talking about The Fiend. Bruce, I agree. Imagine the Haku bar stories on Twitter. Haku bar stories. I mean, my Harley Race stories. So many. There's so many. There's so many. It would have been fun back then to follow along. A lot of people would have ended up arrested, though, I think, for a lot of the stories that would have been shared back in the day. All right, guys, I think I've gotten through all of the messages. I hope I did. I hope I didn't leave anybody out. We went kind of longer than I had anticipated, so we'll table the phone calls until maybe Wednesday, actually. Maybe after the NXT stream, if I do one, we'll do phone calls and... kind of get back to that. But this was fun. Again, I have to thank everybody who sent in super chats tonight. You guys just blew it up. Blew it up. Damn it, Dan and Professor John Gotti, Paul Hamilton, Naif, all you guys, whether it was $2 or 200, you guys are unbelievable. So I think we'll wrap it up here. Have yourselves a great night. Thank you for a very fun stream. Please check out episode 683 of The Sound Off. Brand new episode went up earlier today. The most important episode all year. And I've already taken part of it. It's up here on the YouTube channel. My rant about Vince McMahon, WWE, and Monday Night Raw. I'm hearing a lot of talk from a lot of people and a lot of podcasts and a lot of websites and columns and all this stuff about what the problems are and how to fix them and move Raw back to 2 hours, and you gotta, you know, do less of this and do more of that. And I'm here to tell you that none of that is going to work. They're all wrong. There is only one way that WWE can begin to heal itself creatively. There is only one thing that WWE can do to try to begin to turn things around creatively in that company. And I can't even say that it's going to work for sure. But it has to happen before they could even think about doing any of those other things. One thing, that's it. And I tell you what that is on the podcast today, episode 683. Go ahead. One of the most important episodes all year. Those 20 or 25 minutes I spend talking about that, you need to hear it. You need to hear it. You need to share it. Share it far and wide. Because while we had a really good pay-per-view tonight, do not let that distract you from all of the other issues that aren't just magically going to go away. They had a great show tonight. What will tomorrow night bring? I shudder to think. What will next week bring and the week after that? And that's the problem. One good show does not solve magically all of their creative issues. There is only one way to do that. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a very Merry Christmas if I don't see you guys back here on Wednesday night. And I will see you back here for more Sound Off very soon. Thank you, guys. Take care.